It's great to have a young team. They're energetic. They're smart. I got a ton of them, especially on the web side of things. You know, it's an incredible thing to do, but it's also good to have some long in the tooth in there. They've been there, done that, and they don't freak out over every little thing as much. They can see things at a different level. The quality of your instincts is affected proportionate to your experience. And so if you got some young, cool, sophisticated person on your team starts jerking your chain about stuff, it's good to have your chain jerked. It's good to be challenged. It's good to have new thoughts. It's good for you to be moved outside your comfort zone. But at the end of the day, their academic experience is not going to be anywhere near as valuable in the marketplace as your real world experience, because it develops your feel about stuff, and you can trust that feel.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. My name is Chris Hogan, and I'm excited to host another great episode for you today. Today on the podcast, we have Brad Lominick, the president and key visionary of Catalyst. Catalyst is a leadership conference specifically focused on leaders under the age of 40. We're excited to have him on the podcast today to talk about his new book, The Catalyst Leader, 8 Essentials for Becoming a Changemaker. Please welcome to the podcast, Brad Lominick. Brad, how are you today?
Chris, I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Excited to get to hang out with you here.
Come on, man. You sound like James Earl Jones.
Hey, just don't ask me to sing.
You might have a little Barry White in there somewhere.
Hey, listen, buddy. All I can do is hum. Okay, and my humming is pretty good, but don't I can't go any further than that.
All right.
Hey, excited to talk with you. We want to talk about the new book and learn more about the Catalyst Leader. So, who is the Catalyst Leader out there?
Well, that's a great question to start with, and as context, what you said is true. Like we put on leadership conferences all over the country. We've been doing this for 14 years now, and really started underneath a person that a lot of your listeners, podcast community would know, John Maxwell. And we were doing events with John, and a bunch of us were in our 20s at the time, and said, hey, let's do something for our generation. You know, we want to create a conference environment, a gathering, an experience that will really bring our peers into a place where we can inspire them, encourage them, equip them as leaders, but also have a great time doing it, and really make sure that it's about our generation and about, you know, us and our friends. And so all that is context. You know, we've been doing conferences and leadership events now for 14 years. The Catalyst Leader has become what we would say is the prototype in some ways of our generation and our community. And what we're trying to do with the Catalyst Leader as the book and as the message and as Catalyst events is create leaders who are change makers. You know, and you said the subtitle of the book, 8 Essentials for Becoming Changemaker. What we would say is a changemaker is somebody who is making a difference, obviously, but in some ways is a new definition of a leader and of leadership. You know, so many times in our culture today, we talk to people about leadership and they sort of turn their head sideways and look at us like, well, I'm not really sure I understand, or I'm not really sure I'm on the same page with you, especially younger leaders, because they've grown up with a lot of leaders around them who they don't trust anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So many things have eroded in our culture with whether it's a coach or whether it's a politician or whether it's a pastor or whether it's a local business leader who, you know, we put them on this pedestal, and then all of a sudden we found out that they, you know, weren't people of integrity. And so change maker is in some ways a new definition or a new title for being a leader. And the 8 essentials, as we map out in the book, are the things that we feel like are crucial in terms of characteristics, traits that the Catalyst Leader has to embody in order to lead now and lead well.
Tell me this, you know, why have you chosen to target the young leader?
Yeah, I mean, great question. I think that the first half leader, and those specifically in their 20s and 30s, are really crucial to making our country, making our businesses, making our culture, making our organizations that much better. And when we think about, okay, legacy, what's the next 50 years look like? Well, those are the leaders I feel like we need to be investing in the most.
Mm-hmm.
And every generation is different. You know, every generation that comes along, they figure out ways that they're going to impact their generation the most. And we just felt like that the best way for us to do that would be to create something that was for primarily the 22 to 40 year old, and that those are the leaders who they're starting out. They're probably in their first or second organization. They may not be the senior leader yet, but they're rising. You know, they're aspiring, they're emerging leaders, and many of them are dealing with felt needs that are definitely different than somebody who's 55 and is a CEO or has had their own business for 30 years. And what we also truly believe, Chris, is that the older leader is crucial to this conversation. Like, the mentoring aspect has to be built in. And even at our Calus events, we have the sages on the stage and the wise mentors and the folks who've been around the block who can pass on what they've learned to a 25-year-old. And I think that's one of the things in the last couple of decades that we've lost. We've given up in many ways, I think, on the power of mentoring, because you have so many young leaders these days who, because of technology and information at their fingertips, they're 23 and they're going, oh, I can just go do it myself. And I don't necessarily think that's a good posture, but there's lots of things generationally that we want to make sure we speak into that specifically are for these younger leaders in this day and time.
Right. Well, I definitely, in reading your book, I think that the information is pertinent and relevant to any leader, regardless of age, because the principles you're talking about are the principles that will make a leader a great leader.
Yeah.
So it's applicable. Now, I like the fact, the whole area of mentoring. This area is something that I think people, we do take for granted. And I know for you personally, as you talk about in the book, you had an incredible mentor, and I've had incredible mentors over my life. But it's something that really, really can feed, and it can help someone grow. Now, one of the powerful stories you tell in your book is about being mentored by Bob Foster, whose circle of friends include folks like, you know, Howard Hendricks, Billy Graham, Cliff Barrows. What was that like for you personally?
Yeah, Bob was a mentor when I worked on a place called Lost Valley Ranch. It's truly lost. I mean, it literally is an hour from the closest town in the middle of Colorado. And Bob Foster and his family had started this guest ranch. And I went out there after college. I went to University of Oklahoma and then went out there to, I was thinking I was going to work for a summer, you know, just playing cowboy and riding horses and, you know, being a part of that whole scene. And I ended up staying for 5 years. It was one of the great things in my life that was foundational on a number of levels. But one of the things that I when I look back on that experience, those 5 years, it was so powerful for me was that every Friday morning, Bob would sit down to breakfast with me in the middle of the mountains. I mean, it's just this majestic setting and great bacon and pancakes and eggs and what waffles. But he would say every week, it seemed like, Brad, your 20s, establish your 70s. Your 20s, establish your 70s. And he was a man who was 75 at the time, and I was 25. And so this 50-year gap, to many people, would be like, well, how did Bob relate to you? But what he kept saying to me was, the person you are now, you know, the leader you are, the man of God you are, the person you're becoming in your 20s is laying the foundation for the legacy you will leave when you're 70. And it just struck such a chord in me, this idea of legacy, and how many of us as leaders, we start to think about that in the second half of life. You know, we start to figure out, okay, what am I leaving behind? What is my legacy going to be? And I would say that because of the lesson Bob gave me, you know, start thinking about legacy now. And whether you're 22 or you're 35 or you're 45, you know, don't wait on legacy. We traveled one time, Chris, to Hong Kong together, and Thailand, and here I was 25 and he was 75, and literally he wore me out. I mean, this was a man of purpose, and even at 75 he was living life, you know, like he was 25. And that was another lesson, was, you know, don't ever look at life as I'm coasting now. You know, and Bob still, he's 94, lives in California, and he's literally, like, even as we speak, like, he's thinking about moving to China to accomplish some things that he had as a goal back when he was in his 30s, now being 94. So, man, he's living life to the fullest.
That's incredible. Well, that whole facet of mentoring, I think, is really important, because it takes two sides. You've got to have somebody that's willing to listen and somebody that's willing to talk. And so I would encourage people to get someone that can speak into your life because it is so valuable. And there's nothing like experience. And I don't know, I know you, Brad, you talk about in the book. I don't want to repeat someone else's mistakes. I want to learn and I want to get better.
Absolutely. And I think what's important, too, for mentoring is many times when we're younger, we think, okay, we're not really ready yet to pass on wisdom. And for many leaders who are in their 30s, one of the big areas you have to make a decision on is, when do I start to become the mentor instead of the mentee? And my encouragement is, regardless of where you are in life, I think all of us have a responsibility to mentor those who are coming up behind us. Mm-hmm. If you're 29, you need to be mentoring somebody who's in their teens. And if you're 40, you need to be mentoring somebody in their 20s. And there's never a point where I feel like we sort of turn the spigot on of, okay, it's time for me to start passing on. And so many times we have that sense of, well, I don't really know anything yet. And I would disagree. I would say we all have learned something at each stage of life that we can pass down. And it's got to flow like that. You know, you've got to be pouring out, but you've also got to have somebody pouring in.
Yeah, no, that is a great point. I like what you said, Brad, about the responsibility to give back. That is something we're called to do, and we have to be aware of it. Now, you talk a great deal about the next generation of leaders, and I'm curious, what is it about leaders in their 20s that a small business owner needs to know in order to lead them well?
Well, there's a lot. I think one of the things that tend to be today a tension in our culture is this sense of a lot of older leaders looking at the millennials who are coming up, and even the ones younger than millennials starting to enter the workforce, who they just go, I don't get this generation. I don't understand them. I can't figure them out. I don't know how to relate to them. I can't talk to them. All they want to do is text me. They won't get on the phone with me. And, you know, all those things I think are true, but here's the reality, is every old leader dealt with the same thing when they were in their 20s.
Yes.
There was a generation before them that was saying, oh, these young leaders, I don't get them, I don't understand, they won't pay attention, you know, like the same verse has been happening, just a different song, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a generational transfer issue. So a couple things I would say if you have 20-somethings that are part of your organization, the first thing is you have to realize that they've grown up in a world that's social. So everything about them is social. Social media, social justice, social innovation, social entrepreneurs. Like, there's a new category that says it's all about being social. And what that means is they have a sense that part of the way they live life is that they're connected to everybody and anybody. And, you know, through Twitter and through Facebook and through all these different outlets, Instagram, whatever, you know, the list goes on. I feel like I'm connected to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So my world, the way I view my world, is so different in terms of, you know, when I think of connecting with somebody in a different country, for example. Well, okay, yeah, I can email them, I can get on Twitter, I can find them. So the social side of influence even and of leadership has changed, and the way you have to view that is totally different than the generation before. The other thing is that I think 20-somethings look at life in the same way they look at social media and their worlds of relationships, and it's all integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So companies, organizations, have to build family environments. And if you're not creating a family environment, you're probably not going to attract a lot of younger 20-somethings to your team. And that may look like that, first of all, they want to have flexibility with their schedule. They may work till midnight and then get up at 9 o'clock and show up at 10 in the morning and then work till midnight the next night. They don't necessarily see work and family and social, sort of their friends, networks, and faith, and all. They don't look at those as separate.
Okay.
They look at them as all integrated. So the holistic view of my life is a totally different perspective. They also really want to have a huge sense of connection to calling and purpose with whatever they're working on.
Mm.
You know, which is different than even my father, you know, or my father's father. There was a lot of folks who viewed work as, it's just something that I do as a means to an end.
So for this new leader that's out there, these owners, in dealing with these new leaders, it would be really important for them to really encourage and explain how the business that they run or that they own really kind of connects and helps others.
Absolutely. Yes, you gotta lead with vision, and I think that's where young leaders will really gravitate towards. And when there's a strong visionary leader at the helm of an organization, typically you're going to see some young leaders start showing up. But here's the other caveat about that, Chris, is I don't think that young 20-somethings these days are willing to sign up for somebody's personality-driven movement or personality-driven company.
Okay.
So the 22-year-old can show up and pretty quickly they can understand, is this company all about this one person? And is it really, am I just building their kingdom?
Mm.
And am I building their empire? And am I showing up so that they can profit from me and that, you know, it's all about them? Versus, am I showing up and is it all about the vision?
Okay.
Is it all about this greater purpose? And if we all profit from it, great. But those are two different perspectives. And the younger leader these days is really, really savvy at understanding which of those is happening. And they will quickly move on if they sense that I'm just here to build somebody else's thing.
It is. And you talk about this social area, which is so important. And I tell business owners all the time, you know, younger people are much more social. And don't try to resist it. Embrace it and figure out how to utilize it.
Totally.
You know, and then it'll be a successful thing for both ways. Now, you talked about the family environment. That these young leaders out there are looking for that environment. What does that look like to somebody that's 50 and owns a company or 40 and owns a company that's trying to attract these young leaders? How do they make a family environment?
Well, I think one thing is relational equity. And I struggle with this one as a leader of Catalyst and as an organization leader, is leading with that sense of, I care about you.
Mm.
I care about all of your life. I care about the person you're becoming. I care about the leader you're becoming. But I can't just see what you do here during the day for our organization as the only thing that's important. For type A leaders, man, that one is so hard.
Mm-hmm.
At any level, at any age, that's always a difficult one. I've had the opportunity to see a bunch of tech companies out in Silicon Valley, and there's 20-somethings everywhere. You know, Facebook is a good example. I've been to their headquarters, and when you walk into some of the office areas of Facebook, it feels like somebody's bedroom. I mean, truly, like, you walk in and you think, am I in an office or am I in somebody's house?
Huh.
And the idea that I'm able to craft my area into an expression of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're creating an environment in an office that's a bunch of cubes, which a lot of us exist in, allow the people who work there, especially younger leaders, to give it some vibe, give it some flair, make it feel like it's their own. Allow them to put things up on the wall. You know, they want to create this environment that says, oh, this is part of me. This is who I am, and I can express that. The other thing is, you watch the way people interact with Facebook and the way they get things done, it's very communal. You know, the idea that I'm working together on a bunch of different projects with a bunch of different people is very important, I think, for young leaders. They want to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, but they also want to accomplish things that they're working together with somebody else on. And I don't think that's a new thing that everybody's going, well, how's that different than the previous generation?
Right.
I would say this. I would say that communal and relational environments, the DNA of that has to start with the leader being okay with creating that culture. And if you can't really create that in your company right now, then I would say, okay, it's time to sit back down and figure out how we start to allow these young leaders to have a family-oriented experience in our office. And it's even stuff like, can we provide, you know, snacks for folks for free? I mean, that's such a practical, like, menial thing.
Mm-hmm.
But those kind of things are important for younger leaders to feel like, all right, this is family.
Yeah, and I tell leaders and business owners out there all the time, if you want to know about the group you have, ask them. You know,
exactly.
I mean,
right.
When in doubt, just ask. They'll give you some feedback, and then you can begin to take some steps in the right way. Brad, you talked about and you alluded to schedule a little bit ago. Flexibility. Now, I came old school. I'm a former banker. Okay,
yeah.
So we ran from 8 to 5.
Yep.
And now I hear you telling me I need to be flexible with this. Okay, you're messing with my schedule here.
I know.
But is that important for an owner dealing with the new leaders out there, these 20-somethings, to have some flexibility?
I think it is. And I'm with you, Chris. Like, I'm a little bit old school in terms of, hey, show up on time, and you're here from 8 to 5, and that's what you're signing up for. And I think that is still true. I would not I would not get away from that there's a standard that has to be established. But at the same time, if you're hiring the right people, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're bringing the right people into your organization, and if they're young, part of their, I think what they are hoping for is an environment that says, you trust me, so if I can work from, you know, 7 to midnight at night and still get the things done I need to get done, that you're going to be okay with that. And I think that's important. But I wouldn't give just this blanket approach necessarily in every environment that says, well, just let people do whatever they want.
Right.
Because accountability is equally important to flexibility.
Mm.
And you cannot create a system and an environment and a company without both.
No, I like that.
You got to have both in the mix. And when you trust people, and when you have folks on your team who you know without a shadow of a doubt they're going to get it done, then that's when you start to build in opportunities to say, you know what, it's okay if you come in at 11 tomorrow because I know you're going to work till 7 or 8, or I know you're going to stay at home this weekend and get something done. And that freedom, I believe, is really important for younger leaders because they've grown up in an environment that at the end of the day, their reality is built on themselves. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
Everything is about me. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but that's the reality that we've brought a generation into, and they're wrestling with that. So as much as we can lean into it, we need to, but don't lean into it with just the blind approach of, oh, well, you guys just do whatever you want, and you'll love me because you're all young, and I'll be the cool guy that's 45 and letting you have flexibility. That's a bad approach.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And the time that I adjusted the schedule, we went to a flex schedule, productivity actually went up.
Yeah.
Morale went up. And so it was one of those things where I resisted for about 3 months. But after looking at it and talking to people and hearing about it, you know, I decided, you know, let's put my toe in the water and see what it does. And I'm very glad that I did. And I know my team appreciated me for it as well. What excites you about the next wave of young leaders?
A lot of stuff. I'm incredibly hopeful for this next generation. And I think the passion that this next generation has for good. And I think in companies and in culture, we're being driven into this phase that says we have to have a triple bottom line. For for-profit organizations, the triple bottom line is something that has become really, really important in the sense of, okay, we're doing something that's making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, we have to be willing to see that our product and the way we create our organization has to end up being about doing good. And I believe that's being fueled by the next generation because so many things in life that they've seen don't make sense. And all of a sudden, you have even a social justice move, you know, and especially among younger leaders, this powerful sense that we want to make a difference. And we're not willing to just look at something that's been the same and status quo, especially as it relates to suffering and poverty and sex trafficking and all kinds of justice issues that this generation is going, no, not on our watch.
Mm-hmm.
We're not willing to let this happen. So I think that's a really hopeful thing, and it's pushing all of us to say we have to be about something more than just making a widget. You know, it has to be about a bigger purpose. That's one thing. I think the other thing is that every single 20-something I know, they feel like they can change the world. They feel like the sky is the limit. So the vision factor for this next generation is off the charts. And I love that. I love that they look at things and go, no, we can solve that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what? No, that's you're not dreaming big enough. It's because they've grown up in a global context. You know, they've grown up in a very connected world where it used to we would think about things happening in Asia or in Europe or in Africa or Australia as, well, that's so far away from me. And because of globalization, this generation feels like, oh, we can accomplish anything. Here's the warning signal on that one, though, is that a lot of 20-somethings are now dealing with this expectation that if I don't change the world by the time I'm 30, I've failed.
Mm.
And we've got to be okay with saying the long tail and the perseverance question and the perseverance issue is still in play, and that leaders and change makers and those who are going to have an impact, it might take 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. And, you know, we can't necessarily allow a 25-year-old to look at life and go, if I don't accomplish this by the time I'm 30, I'm a failure.
Right.
It might be that I'm going to accomplish this by the time I'm 50, and it's still okay. But we've got to be willing to lean into that one at the same pace as we are releasing them with the hope and the vision they have that's way bigger than, I think, past generations.
Yeah. Well, I think as well, the younger generation, they have an incredible amount of energy. And I think if a business owner or a leader can tap into that and connect the mission and show that young leader how they are important and vital to that mission, they will get an energy source like they've never gotten before.
Yeah.
And it's really important to tap into that. Now, you know, if I ask you, you know, what excites you about this next wave of young leaders, you know, I'm going to the opposite side.
Sure.
So what about this next generation concerns you?
Yeah, there's just a lot of 20-somethings coming out of college, and they've grown up in an environment that says, I'm being fed with a silver spoon,
mm-hmm.
and everything's being given to me. So what are you going to do for me? That's a big one. You know, one of the other ones is that the sense of loyalty, especially when it relates to a job, vocation, a company, a career, is just not there anymore.
Mm.
And I'm concerned about it, but I also know it's part of the current realities. You know, and when you look at careers, again, my father, 40 years in the same organization. He was a middle school principal. You know, a lot of our fathers and mothers and people before us, they worked for 40, 50 years in the same organization, same company. I'm an Xer, and I'll probably have 3 or 4 seasons of career, different expressions of my calling. Well, for a 20-year-old, the stats these days is that they might have 10 to 15 different seasons of career. So they don't view their vocation as this one job, one location anymore. They view it as seasonal, and it's mm-hmm. just projects to them.
Right.
So we have to understand that. We also have to help them wrestle with, okay, what does loyalty look like? You know, what does it look like to be part of an organization for 10 or 15, 20 years? I mean, the same is true in the free agent market in sports. You know, the old days, somebody stayed with a team for 20 years. And nowadays, you know, you go play for 1 or 2 years with a team and you get your best contract and you move on and go to another team. So that's a concern to me. And I think at the same time, we've got to realize that we're dealing with a new wave of reality when it comes to how long I look at what seems like an appropriate time to stay in an organization.
Yeah.
And if they move on, it's okay. We've got to be willing to release them to move on to something else that they may just go, you know what, nothing personal. I need a new project in my life.
Right. Well, and I think for the business owner out there, if they stay focused on that vision, they stay focused on obviously always communicating that vision and driving forward, you're going to have some people get on and off the bus. Don't take that personally.
Yeah.
You know, I know for me, I used to, if someone would leave, I wouldn't show it, but inside I'd be heartbroken.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking, okay, what did I do wrong? As opposed to looking at it and really thinking about it, it might be the time for them to change seasons. For them to move forward. But Brad, I need you to speak on this entitlement issue for the owners out there that are dealing with these 20-somethings that come in that have some sense of entitlement. How do you address that without killing their spirit?
Well, it's a tough one. I'm still trying to figure that one out. I mean, I think part of what I try to do as a leader is I try to model hard work.
Okay.
And I try to model hustle and make it part of our corporate culture and part of our organizational DNA that, listen, if you're going to be here, we want to create a vision that's big, and we want you to be in that vision and part of it and bought into it, but you're going to work your guts out. I think that's the better way to get young leaders to buy into something,
mm-hmm.
is that it's not about me. It's not about me, like, being heavy-handed as a leader and you know, pounding my fist and saying, you better do it or else, versus it's about a standard that we've set as an organization. And it's about this corporate culture that says, you're going to work your guts out here. And if you don't, you're going to fail, and you're going to let everybody else down. And to me, that accountability is way more in the sweet spot for a 20-something who's grown up maybe in an entitlement culture and generation versus me going, I'm the heavy-handed leader, you do it or else, my way or the highway, you know, that command and control. That doesn't work. It may for some. But I've learned the hard way over the last 10 or 15 years that the old school mentality just is not going to work anymore.
Yeah.
So we've got to find new ways to motivate. And then, as you said, Chris, I think every person who has 20-somethings on their team, one of the first things they need to do is they need to sit down with them individually as well as a group and say, listen, there's some rumors out there that you guys are entitled. Now, let's talk about this and let them create their own system of accountability.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, then, the responsibility is on them because you've allowed them to create it for themselves.
Absolutely. And I want to be around people that want to win. I want to be around people that want to accomplish things. And so I don't have a problem being around people that expect to win. I just want people that are willing to work, you know, to get to there, you know, not that we're just going to blink our eyes twice and it just appears.
Yeah.
You have a quote in the book in chapter 2. It says, every leader faces a temptation to project a persona rather than themselves. They think that in order to maintain confidence of their team, they must appear faultless, flawless, and ever wise.
Yeah.
I love that. And it can put this stress on a leader. So yeah. Being authentic, what does that look like to Brad?
Well, it's being the real me.
Okay.
And I think for leaders, it's being the real you, you know, and the old days, it was all about hiding my weaknesses, and the only way I would get found out if I wasn't great in a certain area is that someone discovered it. And I would argue just the opposite these days, you know, that being authentic as a leader means that you're okay and you're vulnerable about the things you don't do well. Mm-hmm. And you're willing to talk about those, and you're willing to let your team know that, hey, you know, I'm not great at this, and there's a lot of things I'm not great at, and there's things that I struggle with, and I'm not the smartest person. And leading with that, instead of leading with I'm the greatest, and you know, I've really built this, and it's all about me, and then you're going home, and you're going, gosh, I'm scared to death. Well, if you're scared to death, talk about it. Mm-hmm. That is a new posture, I think, that's important, especially if you're going to connect with the next generation, because they are tired of fakes.
Mm-hmm.
In general, like we've seen way too many of them, and so everybody's looking for the real thing. And when you're the real thing and you're the real you, you're going to have tons more influence with the people around you. So,
well, it's easier to just be you. You know,
yeah,
if you start
exactly.
to put on those that stoic face, or you try to play a role of or a persona, you're going to get tired eventually. You don't want to be in character. You want to be in you. And as I look back, some of the greatest leaders that I've ever had, I thought about this years ago, is that they were vulnerable. They told you where they were weak. And they were open about it. And so it wasn't this guessing game. It was one of those things where they have weaknesses just like me, so I could identify with that leader.
Yeah, and social media has helped connecting and being connected to people, but it's also put more pressure on us to maybe try to be like somebody else. And again, you got to be the real you, you know, and the way you're wired, the way you've been created, the real you is what everybody wants. Don't try to create this false persona, this fake version of yourself, because reality is you're going to get found out. That's the other thing. We live in a culture these days that doesn't allow for anybody to really live a life that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've seen this with all kinds of folks who, again, they were leading this persona, and all of a sudden, you know, through technology and media and 24-hour news service, like, they're going to get found out. And I just think the same is true. Like, it's really good business these days to be authentic, because if you're not, you're going to get found out. Like, if you're hiding something, if you're building this fake persona, somebody's going to quickly realize it, and they're going to bring it to light.
Mm-hmm.
So don't even try. You know, just be comfortable with saying, this is who I am, and I'm okay with it.
Absolutely. And if you make a mistake as a leader, just apologize.
Absolutely.
You know, just
yes.
be, you know, address it quick. Don't let it sit there and fester. Just hit it head on. Brad, thank you for taking the time to join us. I look forward to having you back, because there are other areas in the book I want to talk about. I want to talk about a couple of the other essentials, the passionate and hopeful. But I also want to talk to you about the 7 signs you're too big for your britches. Listen, I love that section. And so I look forward to getting you back on and spending time unpacking those, as well as some other things. So thank you for joining us. And again, this is Brad Lomenick, his book, The Catalyst Leader, 8 Essentials for Becoming a Changemaker. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate all the work you're doing to impact leaders, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Take care, my friend. Well, I'd like to thank Brad Lomenick for joining us today. The book is The Catalyst Leader, Eight Essentials for Becoming a Changemaker. We appreciate him taking the time to spend with us. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership or email me your questions at podcast@entreeleadership.com. Stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff so you can keep learning and keep leading. Until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, and grow your profits.